how can you honestly bring somebody in and say he's going to lead our football team when he's got that background?
I don't know how you recover from it. How sick in the head and how delusional and messed up are you if you made this up and run with it?
They went from winning one for the Gipper to winning one for the fake girlfriend.
Would you draft a psychotic dude like this?
I mean, they drafted you, so I know.
This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lugeman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and Tony Boselli. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, welcome in Jaguars Central at Everbank Field. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Lugeman. It feels like game day, just you and me, pal.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a really nice thing. Boselli is in Hawaii to cover the Pro Bowl. I didn't know anyone actually covered the Pro Bowl. I just thought they turned the television on.
It's so disappointing. The league has got to do something about the Pro Bowl in the future because, you know, it seems like every day is news that so-and-so's not going, and so now they've gone down to the fourth or the fifth guy, which, you know, he was like the third or fourth alternate. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about doing away with the Pro Bowl altogether? Would that, as a former player, would that bother you? Would affect your sensibilities?
No, it wouldn't bother me. I mean, I think that they can do something different besides play a game because the quality of the game is not there. And to do something to where you get the Pro Bowl players that are not participants in the Super Bowl, they're at the Super Bowl to attend some type of league function and recognize
right.
them. And, you know, have the incentive and then they get paid. But, I mean, if you're a player, do you really want to go to the Pro Bowl and risk, you know, an injury or to just,
Edwards.
To delay the rehabilitation on injuries that you sustained during the season? Absolutely.
Do you remember
not.
Robert Edwards, the kid?
New England running back. That's yep. right. Blew his knee out and playing beach volleyball.
Never played again. Never. You know, they do this awards banquet now the night, maybe the Friday or Saturday night before the Super Bowl, and the awards banquet that Alec Baldwin hosts. You might as well do something with that.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Make it a TV event because I think that it would sell and have it be a popular televised event. And, you know, I think the players don't want it to go away, I think, mainly because it's a financial boon for them. I mean, it's money. You know, they play a game, they get paid, and then there's incentives and contracts that, you know, they get money out of that. I mean, so the players don't want to lose that aspect of it. But if they married it to the Super Bowl week somehow with a television event would be the right solution in my mind.
All right, so that's where Boselli is. He hates to see his free vacation to Hawaii go away, but he'll just have to tough that one out. John Osher is in Mobile, which may be a better place to be for the Senior Bowl, and he joins us right now. Hello, John. How's lovely tropical Mobile?
Weather than it was last year. And actually, I think Robert Edwards hurt his knee in a beach football game they used to have. And I think it was a one-year deal, but he was definitely hurt on the beach in Hawaii. And I'm with Jeff. I think you go with something like you go with the all-star banquet concept. NASCAR's done it for years. It's always been popular. You know, they're not going to have an all-star auto race at the end of the year, obviously. So, for the same reasons we're talking about. So the concept of a banquet makes sense.
Well, and there's other things that you could do. I mean, much like you had with, the quarterback challenge, you could have skills competitions to where it's more of a controlled environment.
Right.
You know, I mean, you remember the superstars that was on television for you. Bring the Pro Bowl guys out there and let them do the superstars, where they
right.
get in a kayak and race or get in a pool and swim. I mean, just something different besides having a low-quality football game, which is what the Pro Bowl has become.
Well, and, the thing
when
that most people –
you kind of mentioned, Jeff, the fact that, what do the players get out of it? I remember I covered three Pro Bowls in the last decade. And one thing the players do love, and a lot of guys really value it, is that week of spending time with guys that they usually don't see. And there's a lot of friendships that are developed, and that's something that they always talked about when they came back. So, I mean, but you could also, as you said, you could have that without the game.
Yes.
You could set something up where you got that sort of camaraderie, which the players really do enjoy.
John, you sent a tweet out earlier today that there was a lot of energy around Gus Bradley and the Jaguars You know, give us a sense of what you've seen over there with the Jaguars' new administration and what the response has been.
Well, and I'll preface that by saying, you know, there's always energy around anything new. And this time last year, we were all talking about, you know, how the changes were good. So I get that the cynics among us are going to say, well, of course they're talking positively about the Jaguars. But, you know, it's a real thing. I've had four or five different people I know, whether it be writers, whether it be coaches that I've known from other staffs, you know, make it a point to come up to me and say, man, you are going to love Gus Bradley. And they're talking about the, you know, the personality of the man, which we all saw, but they're also saying, look, he's a very good coach. He gets a lot out of these guys. And I've had people do the same thing about David Caldwell. You know, just talking to people when you're out at night, somebody saying, hey.
So you're out at night.
Well, you know, I walk over to the Renaissance, which is where the players' lounge is, and I get some work done, you know. And but people making it a point to say, hey, you know, this direction, Shad's got the right people. And, you know, I'll say it now, I didn't hear that last year. You know, there were positive things said about what was going on, but not with the energy that you're hearing right now. So for whatever it's worth, that's what you're hearing over here. And it's kind of neat to be around it because there is an energy, and I think it's even beyond the city of Jacksonville. There are people around the league looking at it and saying, you know what, that thing could be pointing in the right direction. And it's probably been a while since people have said that.
You know, John, at the Senior Bowl, the primary purpose is obviously evaluation of talent with the players that are there. The second most important thing about the Senior Bowl is that that is really has become the NFL's jobs fair, so
sure,
to speak, and that everybody goes to Mobile, coaches that are looking for work, to meet people to try to get work. And obviously that's a big part of where the Jaguars are at right now with Gus Bradley trying to fulfill his staff. Any news or reports out of Mobile about any additional staff people being interviewed or hired?
Well, I know the contingent left or is leaving today. They were interviewing people throughout. I had an interview with Gus Bradley today and I asked, you know, how long have you slept? And he kind of laughed. Not much since he took the job. That's what he's been doing. The ones that have been reported are the ones we know about right now, but I would say I'd be surprised if we're not hearing some more names within the next couple of days.
Because now, I mean, you're talking from a time standpoint. I mean, to get the guys you want, the good coaches are the ones that are going to get scooped up first.
Sure.
And so you'd like to be able to, and I would expect that Gus Bradley probably will have his staff wrapped up by the end of the week, if I had to guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they kept Jerry Sullivan, who's one of the better wide receivers coaches in the league. But, John, do you get the sense that they're looking at specific guys because they've proven themselves to be the best? Or do you think that Bradley's kind of looking like David Caldwell did for him, you know, up-and-comers at positions?
Well, you know, as everybody knows, when a head coach is hired, he's got a list. And he's got a list at each spot. He's got a list three or four deep. And it's not like he got this job last Wednesday and said, oh, boy, I better start Googling people and, you know, I try to figure out what I'm doing. He's had his targets. I think there's no question that Fish and Babbage were on the top of his list. Those hires got made quickly. And I think he had those guys targeted from day one and has always in his mind sort of had those guys as his sidekicks going in, or at least those guys on a short list. Sullivan and Duffner made sense. I think we'd all agree that they were two of the best coaches on the staff the last few years. Jerry just this last year. So, I mean, I think the process with the coordinators is very fast for that reason, and the process with the position coaches is a little slower because he wanted to talk to old guys on the old staff and give them a chance and then start getting the best people. And, you know, I would think there are probably some names that haven't been reported yet that he's pretty close on, and that there's probably some T's and I's to be dotted and crossed, if you will. But I think the staff is pretty close to being set.
You know, when you look at the two coordinators, and we've said this for many years, when you have a head coach who has a background on one side of the ball, his most important hire is the leader on the other side of the ball. And obviously that is Jed Fish, who comes from the University of Miami, was their offensive coordinator. What are you hearing about Jed Fish in Mobile?
mostly secondhand stuff.
We'll take secondhand stuff, John. You know, we're not above that.
Well, I mean, and the reason for that is a lot of the people that he's worked directly for, you know, he worked with Steve Spurrier. He worked with some other people who aren't actually at the Senior Bowl, so it's been difficult to talk to them. But you hear the people who are around the University of Miami the last couple of years speak very highly of them, of him, and they consider that a loss. So, you know, he certainly has the pedigree, meaning he worked in the NFL. He was a quarterback's coach in Seattle. Then he sort of dropped down to Division I to get the play-calling experience. But he's been around that. And, you know, up-and-coming coaches, if you're going to hire an up-and-coming coach, he's probably not going to have the extensive resume as an NFL offensive coordinator before. But if you look at what he's done, he seems to have the background where it makes sense that he would be a guy that Bradley reached out to quickly.
Hey, we've got to take a quick break. Can we keep you for one more segment?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, before you go to the bar?
No, the lounge, the players'
lounge. Oh, the lounge, that's what it is, sorry.
The players' lounge.
No, there's a media workroom that I spend a lot of time in the evening.
I know what those media workrooms look like in Mobile.
John Osher is over in Mobile from Jaguars.com. We'll grab him on the other side of this break in return here on Jaguars This Week. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week, live from Everbank Field. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Jaguars.com senior writer, is in Mobile. You've been there.
Yeah, it's a very boring town. It's kind of like Birmingham.
Thank goodness.
I actually had a great time in Birmingham. I played there in All-American Bowl a long time ago, 1987.
They don't play that anymore.
It's a great state. No, I love the whole state of Alabama. There's some great places to go. And
you like to hunt over there, though.
The outdoors are out of this world.
I was just about to say that. You're good.
Johnny O.
Yeah.
A question for you, because I noticed today that on Jaguars.com you've got two different interviews posted up besides the Inside the Jaguars Daily Report from the Senior Bowl, which has not been posted today.
Sounds like he wants to read it.
I do, because I am enjoying listening to you and JP, and obviously Patrick does a great job as always. But today you guys posted up the interview one-on-one with Gus Bradley, and then also a one-on-one with David Caldwell that was posted last night. Give us your impressions first with the one-on-one with David Caldwell, which those people can find, by the way, at Jaguars.com. Let me hit that again.
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, and these are just sort of the first little introductory interviews that you do when you're trying to get to know a guy and trying to give the fans an idea of what he's about. I thought it was interesting that David talked a little bit about the draft philosophy, that, you know, it's going to be a team that builds through the draft with free agents as a supplement, which is, everybody knows that's the ideal way to do it. And in order to do that, you have to hit on your draft picks, you know, and if you're doing a lot of work in free agency, it means you're probably missing on draft picks. So that's what most GMs now believe in. And he also said that, unlike in years past where it was a focus on always best available player, in the early rounds they're going to pick for need. And, you know, they're not going to be ridiculous about it. You still want to take out good players. But it'll be more of a mix of the philosophy of best available player with need, which, you know, that's always been a topic among our fans, and I think people find that interesting.
Did you get the impression that certain positions carry more value just because of the nature of the position with David?
You know, I didn't specifically ask him that. My guess is yes, because most GMs, you know, do feel that way. And I know he spent 12 years around Bill Polian, who certainly felt that way. You know, I felt like outside linebacker was not a position that you took in the first round. You know, certainly guard and, you know, the normal positions. Most people believe left tackle, pass rusher, quarterback, cornerback, you know, those are the positions you go in the first round. I'd be surprised if David veered very far from that. I didn't touch on that in the interview, but that's usually the norm.
All right, how about Gus Bradley, the interview that was posted on Jaguars.com today?
Well, again, just what everybody gets from being around Gus is just the energy. He did say something, you know, a topic this week has been, when do you get started? You know, you're doing the coaching search now. At what point do you really dive into the football? And it sounds like it's going to be next week when they actually sit down, and he said their process will be perhaps at first to not have him and David Caldwell in the same room going over this roster, but perhaps going into separate rooms and coming back and figuring out, okay, what did you see? What did I see? You know, so that they could have an independent look and then come in and decide if they saw the same thing. So they're really looking forward to that, and that's what the next step is after the coaching search, because these guys really don't know the ins and outs of the roster yet, but that will be what the next couple weeks are about after this week.
You know, John, everyone's looking at this year's draft and making the comparison back to last year where there were two franchise quarterbacks. And so, you know, apples to apples, they're saying, well, it's not as good a draft. But
right.
Obviously, the draft, and especially with you mentioned, offensive tackles, pass rushers, you know, those are premium positions in their own right. So I mean, what are you hearing from coaches or the Mike Mayocks of the world who are over there at the Senior Bowl? What are you hearing from them on the quality of this draft from the top to the bottom?
Pretty much what you heard all season, and that's that there is not it's not a superstar laden draft, meaning you don't have guys in the top 10 or 12 that everybody's getting excited about and they're going to be immediately franchise changers. But the other thing you hear is that it outside of that, it goes pretty deep for the first four or five rounds, and that you can, you know, it's like any draft. There are good players in any draft. You just got to scout them well and find them. And most media, most draft analysts judge a draft by the first 15, 20 picks, but there are good players through the rounds. This is probably not, frankly, the year to have the number two pick.
No, but it would be a year to make that number.
You'd rather have one with the quarterback.
But it would be.
But after that, it's not as bad as people are saying.
But it would be a great year to be able to make that second overall pick into more. Because of the
sure.
depth of the draft. And, you know, one of the things that helps this
but
draft out.
But the question
out,
becomes who comes up to get it.
Well, and one of the things that helps this draft class out is, what is it, 70-something underclassmen have declared for
yep.
the draft now. And that's a large number.
Oh, sure. And that would stand to reason that especially top of the second, top of the third, a better player than might be there ordinarily. Mel Kiper last week on a conference call said, you know, he was projecting right now 16 of the top 32 to be defensive ends or defensive tackles. And that's an extremely high number. But that might not be terrible for the Jaguars because they certainly need to get better at those spots.
You know, the guy whose name is now out there is Eric Fisher, the offensive tackle mm-hmm. from Central Michigan. And I think a lot of, obviously, scouts knew who this guy was, but most of America didn't because of where he played. You know, what are you hearing about this kid? And could he challenge for the kid from A&M to be the first overall left tackle?
Well, that's what you're hearing. And that happens a lot during the pre-draft. He's come here, had a good Senior Bowl, now he's the hot guy. At the combine, at the pro day, the other kid comes along, he has a good pro day, all of a sudden he's the hot guy. So certainly he's helped his draft status this week. Fisher has. We're still in early January, but you know, he's certainly moved up into where people are talking about him as a top 10 pick. And, you know, you do wonder, is that an area where the Jaguars would look at if he's clearly the best available player at number two?
You know, we've got to go here. Before we do, though, you said
sure.
something on one of your first videos about how, and for our listeners who may not have seen it, it's at Jaguars.com, but I thought it was a very telling statement, and that was is that the Jaguars' first-round pick is probably not in Mobile. And I'd like you to expand on that for people who have not seen that.
Well, not in Mobile because usually, you know, first of all, there's no underclassmen. Second of all, the top guys usually don't come to this game because they can only hurt their draft status. If you're projected as the number one guy, you don't come to this game because if you come here and somebody outplays you, then you drop. So the top 10, top 15 players are usually not going to be here, but there's probably 8 to 10 guys who are projected in the first round, certainly high second. So it's really that if you've already established yourself as a top guy, then the less you do in the offseason, the better, because there's nowhere to go but down.
Well, and the player that needs to be at the Senior Bowl is a player that needs to rise. The guys that
right.
are already there don't need to go because, and you mentioned about, well, if they get outplayed, the number one reason they don't go there is the risk of injury.
Sure.
I mean, because,
sure.
you know, the Senior Bowl practices are not like the East-West Shrine game where you're playing
smiling.
Butter cakes,
okay.
you know,
right.
on the practice field. I mean, at the Senior Bowl, they work and they practice like for real.
And at the East-West Shrine Game, if I remember your stories right, you guys worked hard after hours.
Me and Mark Stepnowski and Jimmy Johnson and Mike Gottfried had more stories. We told more stories on the practice field than we did contact.
From the night before, right?
Yes.
All right. John, thanks so much. Enjoy the ride. When are you coming home?
We're heading out here tomorrow. Team Shadrick heads out tomorrow.
All right, hey, by the way, how's JP doing in his native Alabama?
Oh, he is... He's in hog heaven, if you will.
What is there? A place called the Hog where you're eating?
No, he's actually born in Mobile, and we've heard that story quite a few times this week.
Oh, so is he a little bit of a celebrity there in Mobile?
Well, he's a celebrity everywhere. This is J.P. Shadrick we're talking about.
Okay, all right.
Good luck to you, John. Have a good drive back.
All right, guys, thank you.
All right, that's John Osher. We break now for news here on WOKV.
John. All right. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, returns after news here on Jaguars Radio. Now, this portion of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Fanatics.com. Brian Sexton.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, Brian. You?
You were quiet an awful long time there. Were you just listening intently to what John Osher reported?
I'm learning so much.
You need to go to Mobile next year.
Why?
Well, Lodge has been there. I've been there.
You know, I was thinking the next year I might road trip and go to Mobile. And
we should do the show live from Mobile.
Kind of do a.
You're going to be hunting with Ken Stabler.
That's what I'm talking about.
You're going to do the outdoor show. You're doing this.
You go to Mobile, right? And you get a little bit of the All Star game in, and
just
then
a little bit.
You know, then you head up the road to the Black Belt of Alabama and enjoy the last part of the rut and deer season of Alabama. It'd be
then
great.
On the way home, you stop off and you find some rich Alabama alum that Ken knows, who's got a great big boat, and you're offshore fishing.
You know, it's funny that you mention that, because the few times that I've been over to Alabama on hunts in January, it's fun meeting the Roll Tide folks of the state of Alabama and the large landowners there. I mean, it is a lot of fun.
Yep.
My kind of people. I love meeting them.
So we got 20 minutes left in the show. Let me throw a question at you. Baselli and I were talking about this a few weeks ago when you were out of town, and we were talking about the staff. We didn't even know who the coach was going to be at that point. In fact, at that point, I don't even think Mike Mularkey had been let go yet, and Gus Bradley certainly hadn't been hired. But we were talking about position coaches, right? And there are what? Defensive backfield, defensive line, offensive line, tight end, running back, quarterback.
It's funny you say when you talk about staff, I mean – you look at some staffs in the league, and some of them will have 23 to 26.
Well, this one's had a lot of coaches over the years.
And especially in the last couple of years. Whereas when you look at one of the most successful staffs in the league, which resides in New England, they have a coordinator for each area, offense, defense, special teams, and then they have one position coach. Like, for example, defense. You got defensive backs, linebackers, defensive line. On offense, offensive line. Tight end, running back, wide receiver, and you don't even have a quarterback's coach because that's the offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels. And they have no coaching interns, well, I think with the exception of two young kids. That's it.
So do you see that happening here?
I mean, there's different ways to go about it. I mean, if there was one position that you would like to have two, I think on each side of the ball, I think defensive backfield is one that you'd like to have two.
Safeties and corners.
Or the defensive coordinator's got to be heavily involved in the backfield. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I would say offensive line, because you're dealing with typically 8 to 10 guys on a roster, and then you're looking at the practice squad guys as well. I think that's a position that would merit having an additional assistant.
All right, so tell me what you think, because our – conversation was about the two most important coaches other than the head coach, and Tony had two very specific.
Okay,
you tell me what you think, and then I'll share you with what he thought.
Well, to me, I think the most important positions are obviously your coordinators away from your head coach, but to me, the play caller, and that's typically your offensive coordinator. But I say play caller because sometimes an offensive coordinator is not necessarily your play caller, because a lot of times your head coach might be the play caller. You know, so the play caller to me, because I think it's a real knack for play callers to have a feel for the game and a feel for his personnel, and then to be able to assimilate a lot of information on game day. For example, at the Miami Dolphins this year. The Jaguars have a noted advantage when they have a defensive backfield injury situation, and you would like to target that particular spot. The Jaguars failed to do so. And I think that as a play caller, you want to see that. You want to take advantage of that. But you also, you're feeling the flow of the game. And I think that's, first of all, that's the hardest position. It's the position that's the most criticized, bar none, in the National Football League. And to me, it's the most important because the guy has to have supreme confidence to be able to close the ears and tune everything
and
else
and just
out.
Go.
The second one, I'm kind of with Tony because I know you told me exactly what his thoughts were. To me, I would say defensive backs, and a lot of times the coordinator is a defensive backs coach, just because coverage is so important in the National Football League. And once you figure out what you're doing on the back end,
right,
you can do whatever you want up front. And you can be so creative as long as you cover the field. And it's now a passing game, and so I would say defensive backs.
You know, and I bet, and I haven't done this in a couple of years, but I bet if you went and looked at all the defensive coordinators in the league, they were linebackers or secondary coaches. You don't find that many coordinators that come from the defensive line.
You find more defensive coordinators coming from the defensive back end than you do up front.
Because they're so complex, right?
Yes.
I mean, coverages are incredibly complex.
I mean, defensive line is simple. I mean it can be somewhat complex with adjustments and stuff, but, I mean, overall, defensive line is not rocket science. So it's where what you're doing in the back end with motions and adjustments and disguises, it can be extremely complex.
You know, someone might mention Rod Marinelli, but he was the head coach in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and then he was the defensive coordinator in Chicago. I mean, there are some, but you just see
not
more.
Many.
Not many. So Baselli's two, obviously the secondary coach, the mm-hmm. backfield coach. He thought offensive line.
Well, of course. He's a former offensive right. lineman.
But everything starts with the guys up front, obviously. And we saw just how poorly the offensive line played this year, which kind of fit into our conversation that day. It really is critical, especially when you've got a young quarterback that you're unsure about, to be able to keep him upright.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the offensive line, the play of the offensive line is very important. But to me, finding that guy that has a knack for calling plays and a feel for his own team and also at the same time a feel for the opponent is truly unique. And they don't come along very often, the good ones. They
right.
really don't.
I don't know this new offensive coordinator, but here's what I do like. He worked with Coach Spurrier, and obviously Spurrier has a very forward-thinking
great exposure there.
With Mike Shanahan, and you've seen what Gary Kubiak became after all his years with Shanahan.
I mean, if you wanted to pick a couple guys to have worked for, to bring in an offensive coordinator, and if you look around the league, I mean, from the college ranks, clearly Steve Spurrier would be one of the guys that would be in the top three that you would say, I want my guy to have worked for this guy at the college level.
Right.
Bar none, because right. Steve Spurrier was so far ahead of the curve at Florida long before the rest of college game kind of caught
he changed.
Up with him.
Changed
the game.
At
the pro level, I think Mike Shanahan is a guy. I think Mike McCarthy, you know, anybody from that, the coaching tree of Bill Walsh.
And he was in San Francisco.
Mike Holmgren, I mean, because that offense and the way that they ran it was just, I think it was ahead of the curve somewhat too back in their day, and because they were passing more than anybody else.
And, you know, and here's a guy that most people will think of his tenure with the Ravens, Brian Billick, and think, well, that was a defensive-minded team, and you're right. I mean, they won with Trent Dilfer and Jamal Lewis. But if you go back, 1998, he was the offensive coordinator on that 15-1 Minnesota team.
Scored over 400 points,
they,
I think.
Well, no, they scored over 500.
Yeah,
they set
500.
The league record. They
broke Redskins were the ones to first go over 400.
And, right, and they broke the Redskins record, and then
right.
it was summarily, I think, the Patriots of 2 years ago beat it. But mm-hmm. So people forget that Billick was a tremendous offensive mind, and he's another guy from the
yeah,
Wall
but
Street.
You know what? With Billick, he's an ass.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can't
know.
Change that. But But
I can't say anything good about that guy because he's an ass.
But you've got Fish, who has learned from some big offensive minds, and so that's encouraging that you're going to get some guy in here who gets it,
well,
who understands.
And also that, you know, if you're going to get a young guy, you know, that's learned from some of the greats at some point, you probably would be nervous about having a Jed Fish come in as offensive coordinator if he were a wide receivers coach, an offensive line coach, a passing game coach, prior to getting an offensive coordinator job. But the good thing for him is, and a smart move by him, is that he was doing the positional type thing and then got an opportunity to be an offensive coordinator slash play caller at the University of Miami. Go do it. Get the exposure. And so now you've been there. You've done that. And then when you come back into the National Football League, you've got the experience. And I smart move by him, because he left a good situation to take really what some might have viewed as a step down.
Well, and they've got all kinds of issues down there for the next couple of years.
Yes, because you know, you leave the Seattle Seahawks, right?
Oh, yeah. Paul Allen's
and
big.
And you take the job for the Miami Hurricanes, which, I mean, the Miami Hurricanes program is not exactly what it was.
No. It's not close to what it was.
But you get the experience and you get the exposure, and then all of a sudden somebody gets a job from that coaching family tree, and the first person they go to is the guy that left and went and got the experience.
So in other words, sometimes you take a step back to take a step forward.
Sometimes you got to.
And he did it, and it will be interesting to see what he thinks of the roster. Hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with him in the next couple of weeks. Let's take our final break. We'll come back one more segment. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Joe.
Hey, gang, you getting your Jaguars rewards? You all sign up at rewards.jaguars.com. You get cash back or credit for future season ticket purchases every time you shop online using the Jaguars Rewards website. It's easy. Start saving now. Rewards.jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. For more information on joining the Refer a Fan program, call the Jaguars Ticket Office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com.
All right, about 6 minutes left in the program this evening. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, Baselli and Osher back next week, and it's just going to be in and out all off-season long, but we'll be here every Wednesday night and leading up to the draft, which is about 90 days away at this point.
Not that far away.
No, it really isn't. And there's a lot of work for Dave Caldwell and for Gus Bradley to get done between now and then.
Yeah, I think a lot of the work that we're talking about, a lot of that is already being done and has been done. So I don't want to give people the impression that they haven't done any preparation. I mean, you still have a scouting staff intact that I'm sure is going to get tweaked at some point. Once David Caldwell,
it's generally after the draft.
Yeah, and Gus Bradley kind of get the coaching situation squared away. I'm sure there will be tweaks there, but you know the staff that they have in place, and then also David's work while he was in Atlanta. You know that comes with him too. So I mean the work has been done.
But the other side where the work really needs to be done is on their roster here. I mean, how much do you think at this point they know about this roster?
Well, probably not much at all. I mean, unless, you know, you're talking about some of the obvious things. But I really liked what John Osher had talked about with us at the beginning of the program, where Gus Bradley and David Caldwell were going to evaluate the roster, I think, starting next week, and that they would do it separately so that they can form their own opinion and then meet on it and then, you know, come to some kind of consensus on where they're at with the roster that they have. And I like that idea because, you know, you don't ever want to have one unified voice. You want to have, and you don't want to have dissension in the room, but
sure,
certainly a disagreement can be a good thing.
Well, we're about 6 weeks away from the start of free agency, and you've got some big decisions to make.
Right, and that's, you know, and then that all kind of lies together. And I think that free agency, and I always like the approach with free agency, is that you try to fill holes with free agency and that you just try to get your team better in the draft. And so, in other words, if you're obviously lacking in one particular position, you go get a guy in free agency so that when you get to the draft, you feel like you can take the player you truly want regardless of position.
A guy like Terrence Knighton, though, is a little bit different in the sense you've got to decide.
Well, you've got to decide about him, Derek
right.
Cox,
and you don't know
Darryl Smith.
And personally, now, I mean, maybe Mark Duffner can give them some insight there, maybe the scouting staff here. But, I mean, how big is that decision? Because he's a defensive tackle. How good is he now after this year? Because I know you've been high on him in the past.
Well, you know, I don't know what their opinion is going to be on it, but I think with Terrence, it's probably going to be a situation where you're going to let him test the market.
Yeah.
You know, and see what the price is set. Now, if you're Terrence, you want to go to the market. I mean, that's where you get the most money, when you get more than one party involved in the bidding process.
What about Derek Cox?
You know, if Derek were healthy, then I think that you would probably be very aggressive in sewing him up. But because he hasn't had health, that would maybe slow you down a little bit. But he plays a premium position.
And Gus Bradley had big corners with that defense
in
Seattle last year.
And when you play a premium position, it's hard to let those guys even have an opportunity at getting away.
All right, so this is fodder for conversation for many, many weeks to come. Quick couple thoughts before we have to break here on the championship games.
Man, you know what? The game that impressed me the most was the Atlanta Falcons-San Francisco game. And all of a sudden, Atlanta jumps out to a 17-point lead. And I'm going, that's a good, comfortable lead, but it's probably not enough yet. And I give Harbaugh, and that would be Jim, all the credit in the world, because down 17-0, they came back out offensively and went back to what they're basically what they've been built on, and that's establishing the run. And now when I go back to that thing about play caller and having a guy that's got a feel. And I think in that situation, the way they went back to the running game to go back and establish what they're all about, being a big physical team, I give them a lot of credit, because that's very hard to do in that situation. And then they came back, and you know, to have the Atlanta Falcons get shut out in the second half is, to me, inexcusable. You can't get shut out at home in the biggest game of the playoffs in an entire half.
Now, and you're absolutely right. The Ravens, you know, I know they went on the road and beat Peyton Manning, and they went on the road and they beat Tom Brady, so you've got to give them respect. But when you look at the Niners,
New England played poorly.
Yeah,
they did. That's about as poor of a game as the Patriots played. Wes Walker's drop on 3rd and 7 was a critical drop. And even though it wasn't magnified at that point,
huge momentum.
But you have a couple drops in that ball game with that type of an offense. And, you know, when I did Film Room Friday with Jaguars.com last week, I talked about the X factor with the New England Patriots having to be the running backs, the two young, talented backs that they have. They weren't a factor in that ball game. One of them got knocked out.
You know, the thing that strikes me, I mean, just in the last minute here, San Francisco is so good on both sides of the ball on the line.
They are a great team, Brian. Yeah. They're so good all so in all parts.
And they were built
except for kicker.
Yeah, right. Yeah, at one point you just thought maybe David Akers needed to get up and go change his clothes and leave.
He won't be there next year.
Yeah, probably not. They're so big. You know, whether it was Joe Staley who was a first round pick, or how about the year that they took the kid from Rutgers, the right tackle, mm-hmm. and then Mike Iupati from Idaho.
And you know, the best guard is probably Boone, the right guard.
Yeah, I mean, they just have done a tremendous job building that team.
But what is impressive about them is just the way they play so hard. And to me, that's a direct result of the leader that they have, Jim Harbaugh.
All right. Logs, thanks so much. Talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody.